Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0, the only podcast that focuses on mental health while mixing in movies, music, books, sports, and pop culture. Here are your hosts, Rebecca and Joe Lombardo.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Voices for Change 2.0. We hope you're having a great Saturday.
Hey, good morning. We have a great show in store for you today that we're really excited about.
But before we dive right in, we wanted to briefly talk about a new mini-series that we heard about yesterday as we were sitting in our doctor's waiting room. Commercial came on TV for, this new miniseries. And by the end, I had goosebumps. I was in tears. I'm getting a lump in my throat just talking about it. I didn't know that was going to happen. It's an ABC miniseries called When We Rise that starts February 27th and ends March 2nd. And it features Guy Pearce and Mary Louise Parker.
Wow, do you need a minute?
Go ahead. It's fine.
Your voice is all cracking and everything.
It's okay. Go ahead.
It's so cute. The miniseries chronicles the real-life personal and political struggles, setbacks, and triumphs of a diverse family of LGBT men and women who helped pioneer one of the last legs of the U.S. civil rights movement from its turbulent infancy in the 20th century to the once unfathomable successes of today.
If you get a minute and you can Google, again, it's called When We Rise, and you can Google it and watch the commercial, because I don't know how often the commercial will be on, because it's a little while before the show's going to be on. But as I said before, I was in tears and had goosebumps by the end of the ad, and, you know, I get that way for insurance commercials, but this, this was certainly something different. So definitely keep mark your calendar. You probably won't be able to get that programmed on the DVR yet, but it looks fantastic, and I really think it's going to be an amazingly positive thing for the LGBT community, and God knows we all need a lot of positivity right now. So,
amen. That being said, we'd like to introduce you to our very esteemed guest that we're very excited to speak with today.
Let me say that I am well aware that many members of our Twitter mental health family are out there listening to the show today because of our guest, and we just wanted to say hello to you guys and thank you to all of you for your continued support. I think you guys all know who you are, and I'd take the whole show to mention you, so... Today, we are speaking with a man that has no equal as a mental health advocate. From his public speaking to his blogging and his podcast, it seems like he never stops fighting the good fight.
So please, everyone, take a moment to welcome to our show, Mr. Gabe Howard. Good morning, Gabe.
Good morning. That might be my favorite introduction ever. That's awesome.
We're glad to hear it. And, one last thing that we do want to make note of, if you are on our Blog Talk site listening to the show, there is a chat room underneath. You'll find a box full of scrolling photos, many of Gabe, some of us, and underneath that there is a chat room. So you can go into that, and our producer Scott will let us know if anybody sends us any questions that way. You can also go on Twitter and use the hashtag VFChange, and we will try to get your questions in during the course of this show. So sorry, I should have mentioned that a little bit sooner. So sorry to interrupt you there, Gabe.
That is quite all right. I'm just happy to be here. It's a great Saturday morning here in Ohio. It's not cold, it's not raining, and it's not snowing. So I'm pretty sure
yeah,
that
amen.
This is yeah. Yeah, anything I don't have to shovel or that, you know, gets me wet, I'm pretty pleased with.
Well, you know, I think we had this discussion last week. You know, we're just right across the state line there in good old Michigan, so we're getting the same kind of weather right now.
Yep.
I have a good friend she recently moved, but she had been living in Michigan, and she is also a huge Ohio State fan. So, you know, it's like I told you, we love Michigan State and Michigan, and we're not against them in any way, but we don't really follow college football. So you don't have to worry about us getting on your back for your Ohio State love there.
Well, this is good. We can be friends. See, a compromise is in reach.
Yeah. Yeah, following college sports isn't really our forte as much. So, do you have any questions for us before we jump right in?
No. Go ahead. Fire away. Rebecca prepared me very well for this, so I'm excited. Let's do it.
Sweet.
Okay, awesome. First question I have for you is, do you remember the first time you realized you were suffering from depression or anxiety?
So, sort of. And I answer it this way on purpose. In retrospect, sure. It's easy to look back at some of the things that I did when I was younger and say, oh, well, now that I have been educated, now that I've been diagnosed, now that I have, you know, learned about mental illness, that was definitely depression. But at the time that I was going through it, no, I just thought I was, you know, sad, or, and in many ways, I just thought that I was misbehaving. I was bad. So in retrospect, started very, very young. But of course, when I was very young, I just thought this was my personality.
Right. That makes sense. You know, it's, you know, when you're younger and you're going through all these emotions and trying to make sense of that, plus the rest of the world and everything that's going on, and you don't know, you know, you don't think to ask anybody or anything like that. You're just like, well, this is me, you know?
Yeah. And it's a little worse than that too. You know, my parents always come off so well in these, and they love me very much. There's no animosity there. But my parents, you know, took the added step of thinking this was a behavioral problem. So not only did I not ask them, they told me that I was bad. You know, the cheer up, the get better, the, you know, don't be annoying, don't be so down. You know, why can't you be happy? You have nothing to be upset about. Every single stereotype that you could think, they hit me with, because they just thought, you know, I was being obnoxious. They really, truly,
right,
and honestly, with every fiber of their being, thought that this was a behavioral problem, and it was their job as my parents to correct it before I got out in the real world and, you know, got fired from a job for, you know, being sad.
Right.
But they didn't know,
right,
either. So this just made the problem worse for all of us. But of course,
right,
mostly for me.
Right. You know, and I went through a similar struggle, and, you know, during my teens and everything, we didn't know, you know, my parents had their hands just full with, you know, there were six kids in our family originally, and I was the youngest, and my dad traveled for work a lot. And, you know, my mom had a stroke when I was younger, and she, you know, she had to relearn how to talk and eat and everything. So there were times when she just couldn't cope as well as she would have liked to have, you know. And I think my brothers were kind of wild, and my sister moved out when I was very young, and I think she just didn't have the opportunity to sit down and say, hey, I think maybe there might be something going on with her, you know. And I just, because I was terrible. I won't lie to you. I was a terrible terrible, like 15, 16 year old, just a witch. I was not a nice girl to my parents. I was mean and nasty. And so I, excuse me, I can understand completely where you're coming from with that. I would imagine they probably thought the same thing, but really just tried to, you know, shoulder on and do the best that they could with what they had to work with.
Yeah, so you have no doubt. I mean, sorry.
No, no, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I have no doubt that my parents absolutely did the best that they could. They just didn't know. I tell this a lot. You know, my parents were, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My father was a truck driver. So we really did have that, you know, stereotypical blue-collar, you know, working class kind of lifestyle. And I'm not insulting that in any way. It's just we didn't have any education about this. There was no mental health training. We didn't learn about it. Nobody in my family had gone to college. Of course, birds of a feather do truly flock together. So our friends were other blue class, working class people. And there was no mental health training, skills, education whatsoever. And of course, what was, you know, the whispers and the talking. We just really believed that everybody with mental illness was, you know, violent and hearing voices and crazy. I mean, it just, we had that very pop culture stereotypical notion of what mental illness was, and I didn't fit that mold. Therefore, I was fine. So my parents were just going to raise me right. And it backfired tremendously on all of us.
Yeah. You know, there, it wasn't talked about back in the day. You know, you didn't hear about it except for, like you said, you know, mentally ill people were violent. They were loony.
You know, one flew over the cuckoo's nest kind of thing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't, you know, the, what you see today with, you know, dealing with bipolar disorder, depression, anxiety, these type of things, PTSD, it wasn't talked about. You know,
it's sad that we've made leaps and bounds, but have not made leaps and bounds. Does that make any sense?
Oh, it does. We have so far to go, but we have, you know, we are closer. I have a million analogies about this. My favorite one is if you owe somebody $10,000 and you start owing them $10,000 and then one day you work hard and now you only owe them, you know, $4,000, you've made a lot of progress. That's a tremendous amount of progress. But at the end of the day, you still owe them $4,000. You're not done. You're not there.
Right.
And if you decide to declare, oh, I've made so much progress paying this loan off, so I'm going to quit now, that's not going to work. And you know, sometimes in the mental health community, we get there. We're like, oh, we've made so much progress, so we're done now. Yeah, no, there's still a large amount of debt to be paid. You know, again, calling back the analogy.
Right, exactly. So, you know, obviously you had support from your family, but you didn't.
Right.
What about your friends? How are they supportive through this time?
So
when you're first kind of getting involved in the, you know, when you first started realizing that you were suffering from depression, did you have friends that helped you through it at all?
Well, sort of. As a child, as a teenager, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. I was bullied pretty significantly, and I don't want to say that I had no friends, because that's not true. I did have friends, and they were, of course, very helpful, but they didn't know what was going on either. I mean, birds of a feather really do flock together, so I you know, they had their own issues, and we did support each other, but accidentally. When I was older, you know, nobody knew what was going on. And I love this story. This is probably my favorite story to tell. When I was 25 years old, which is, you know, around when I was diagnosed, I had been married and was divorced and just all kinds of stuff. We'll save those stories for another time. But I was casually dating a woman, and casual is the polite way to say, you know, we were just kind of randomly seeing each other. And her mother was a psychiatric nurse. She also has depression, so she understood it. And she was a college graduate, so she had taken, you know, psychology 101. She had been to you know, various classes on mental health. So she understood it really, really well. So again, that little bit of knowledge allowed her to notice that something was wrong with me. And she came up to me one day and she said, "Are you going to kill yourself? Are you thinking about committing suicide?" And I had no reason to lie. I didn't think that it was shameful or wrong. I thought that everybody felt this way. So I said, yes.
Right.
And she, you know, immediately flipped out. She's like, "Oh, we need to go to the hospital." And I said, "Why would we go to the hospital? I'm not sick. Sick people go to hospitals. I'm fine. I'm just weighing the pros and cons of, you know, living or dying. That's perfectly normal." And she said that it wasn't
That's reasonable.
Normal.
Yeah.
Right. And that's how I felt. And she, of course, knew that it was unreasonable. And she was the first person to ever challenge this notion in my life. And she desperately wanted me to go to the hospital. And I desperately didn't want to go to the hospital. So she tricked me. She said, here's what we'll do. We'll hop in the car. We'll drive to the hospital. And we'll ask the intake people whether or not you need to be here for this way of thinking. And apparently, even in my suicidal, delusional, and depressed state of mind, I still desperately wanted to win this argument. So we hopped in the car. We went to the hospital. And, you know, we all know how the story ends. I mean, she was completely right. I was completely wrong. I was admitted to the psychiatric hospital that night. It's where I got my diagnosis of bipolar disorder. It's where I started treatment. So that's the day that everything began to change. That's the first day that I realized that something was wrong. Previous to that, This was just my personality. This was just, you know, some people can sing, some people can't. This is how Gabe acts. There's no mechanism of illness here. So yeah, it was kind of a shock. There was a lot of shocks.
Yeah, it sounds like it. You know, it was just happenstance that you happen to have this particular person in your life that recognized what was going on with you and was able to help you take steps to seek treatment.
Exactly. And it was pure luck. I was just going to say that.
Wow.
It's scary to think. And on one hand, I want to be special. You know, who doesn't want to? I want to be special and say, look, it all worked out. Somebody saved me. But the reality is there's way too many people that some of these people, they're not casually dating people that understand mental health and get saved. I just got lucky.
Right.
I met a woman and she decided to get involved. I could have not met her. I could have met somebody else that didn't understand. She could have thought, man, I understand mental illness. That guy's mentally ill. I'm getting out of here. I don't need to deal with this. And then I would have still been alone. So this is way too serious to involve luck. So the only reason I'm saying here is because I met her and because she decided to get involved. In other words, because I got lucky. I'm not any more or less deserving than anybody else. I just got lucky. It makes for a great story, but it's a scary story as much as it is heartwarming.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's very you hear the story and you just like I'm sitting here going, "Whoa."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? it's just an astounding story.
You know, being bipolar myself, I can put myself in that situation. And, you know, I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't been able to go, you know, and finally say to my parents, look, this is what's happening. I have to get help. You know, if you know, they had been the type of people that just said, oh, you know, you'll figure it out or you know, what have you. If they hadn't taken me and gotten me help, you know, what kind of luck would I have run into to be treated eventually, you know, if anything. You're right, it's scary as much as it is, you know, of a thank God sort of a tale. You know.
And it gets a little bit I don't mean to jump down a rabbit hole on this one, but of course I also had other things going for me, like health insurance and money and a decent family.
Right.
So
right.
Let's say that she would have found me, but I would have had no health insurance, no job, no money. I would have been homeless and estranged from my family. Yeah. Her options to get me help would have been, you know,
very limited.
Vastly limited. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So I just lucked out all over the place.
Well, before we continue, Gabe, we're going to take just a brief break. We will be playing a song called Beautiful by an American Idol finalist by the name of David Hernandez. We'll be back.
Father in the sky, and they started to align. I see you passing by, and we're slowing down the tide. Now my love is flashing by, all I see is flashing lights. Cause you're right here by my side, can you feel it come alive? If this were a love song, would you be mine? I just can't get you off of my mind. And I think about you all day and night. So I wrote you a love song, won't you?
Welcome back to Voices for Change 2.0. I'm Rebecca, and
I'm Joe. How's it going?
And we are here talking to a fantastic mental health advocate, Gabe Howard.
I'm still here.
Yay!
Thank God for that. We'd be in trouble otherwise.
We'd be bumming. We'd be asking each other these questions, and it just wouldn't make as much sense.
No, wouldn't go over. So. Gabe, when did you first start to advocate for mental illness, and what were your beginning steps?
So I fell into it, sort of, and you know I got better. Obviously, I mean it took 4 years. It took 4 years of setbacks and ups and downs and back and forth and a little good and a little bad and then really bad and then really good and then finally I got it all under control. But during that time, I used a lot of services. Obviously, I saw a psychiatrist, I saw a psychologist, I saw structured hospital type things, you know, medication, et cetera. But one of the things that I did during that time is also went to support groups, and I met other people that also lived with mental illness, you know, bipolar disorder, depression, and so forth. And when I got well, you know, obviously I used to use the services because I needed them to, you know, help me along the journey. And then when I was quote unquote done with the journey, you're never done with it. But, you know, when I reached recovery,
right.
Well, then, you know, they're like, hey, you want to volunteer? And I thought that was fair. That seemed very, very fair. You know, when I needed help, there were volunteers for me. So now that I'm sort of at the top of the ladder, it's important that I help more people climb up. So I began volunteering for a local mental health charity and, you know, doing things like, you know, fundraising or walking, not walking, but, well, I mean, we walked at the fundraiser, but leading support groups and things like that. And
right.
That's sort of how it all began. I became a public speaker accidentally. We're back to the fundraiser again. There was a kickoff luncheon for their big fundraiser, and they needed somebody to give like a 15-minute, you know, rousing speech about what this money is used for, how these services help, how this organization has impacted my life, and why we should just be all excited to do this, and yay. So I thought, and you know, tie it into my personal story. And I said, okay. So I give a 15-minute speech. I get a standing ovation. Everybody is just thrilled. And a lot of people came up to me and like, you are really good. You know, we've been doing this for a long time, and you were really good. And the first words out of my mouth are, oh my God, I was terrible, and I stunk, and it was awful. And but, you know, people recognized that I had a certain innate talent to do this. And with their support and their help, I just kept volunteering and volunteering and getting better and better and better. And then it just became, you know, this, it became a full-time job, and I'm ecstatic. But
yeah,
to answer your question, it was an accident.
it's funny because what you started talking about with the public speaking actually leads into our next question, which is a two-part question, which I'll read it as we originally wrote it and worded it just so it makes sense. did you always have confidence in public speaking, or was that something that you had to develop? And what topics do you speak about, and how do people reach out to you?
So there's a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
I always had confidence in public speaking. I was never, I'm not a wallflower. I'm a really, 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 really introverted or extroverted guy. There is no introversion in me whatsoever. I will completely talk to a stranger in public right now, no problem. But it's...
I'm getting that. I'm getting that.
Yeah.
Surely not you, no.
But of course, there's a difference between public speaking and public speaking about something so incredibly personal. And
right.
When I first got started, that was the challenge. You know, walking up and, you know, telling jokes or, you know, talking about, I don't know, I'm probably an expert in something. That was no problem because the subject matter isn't, you know, necessarily scary. But, you know, walking up and talking about living with bipolar disorder and the things that I have done, and the things that I have been through, and it wasn't easy, but I felt that it had a lot of value. So there was the challenge for me, not the part about talking, but the part about talking about living with bipolar disorder. And through practice and through time, you know, I saw the good, I saw the bad, and I've certainly seen the ugly, and it's all sort of meshed into, okay, I can do this. And I do, and it's fantastic. Now there was other parts of that question that I've now forgotten.
Obviously one of the topics you speak about is of course your struggles with bipolar disorder. How do people reach out to you?
Yeah, if someone wanted to contact you to maybe have you speak at an event, how do you usually prefer that they contact you?
Oh, okay. So my website, which is currently being revamped as of this show, so you'll get a little splash screen, you know, for the next few days. But GabeHoward.com is my home on the web. And right now, if you go there, you'll just get, you know, a little splash screen that says coming soon. But that'll be back up and running here in a few days. But you can also email me at gabe@gabehoward.com, or you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/gabehoward29. And I think I'm gabehoward29 at Twitter. So basically Google Gabe, Google Gabe Howard Bipolar, and you're bound to run into me. And people contact me in all kinds of ways, you know, certainly from the website, via email, or, you know, I've even had people contact me in the comment section of my blog. We really love you. How much do you charge? And I always find those people's email addresses. But
homing pigeon.
But yeah, as far as what I talk about, you know, I talk about living with bipolar disorder, my personal story, which is, you know, very interesting. I didn't used to think that it was, but I found out that it was. And I also talk about, you know, various levels of advocacy. Not as often. I'm working on creating more workshops around advocacy, because a lot of people, you know, they don't want to be public speakers per se. You know, they don't want to stand up and give the hour-long keynote speech, but they really respect the amount of doors that I've been able to open up and the amount of education that I've been able to provide. And the big question that a lot of people have is, how can me, my organization, my family, my church group, et cetera, how can we do that? And I'm going to be launching here in the next couple of months a specific workshop designed to teach people some pretty basic steps that will get significant results. I don't want to say that it's an easy thing to do, because advocacy is never easy, but it's not as hard as people think that it is. It's a lot of, you know, it's much like moving. You know, moving your house from one house to another, it's not rocket science, but it is hard, and it involves a lot of organization and heavy lifting and skills, and, you know, it takes a few weeks to do, but
planning.
We kind of understand how it works. So if people psych themselves out and think, oh, it's impossible to advocate, nah, it's not impossible, but it is difficult, and I can give you some basic instructions on how to do it. And I think that's going to be a really big thing, just because of how much value it has to the mental health community, because people want to get involved. It's just so daunting.
Right.
And I'll tell you, in my own personal experience, I've actually gone through and done searches for mental advocacy, you know, online courses or, you know, certifications in mental health advocacy and things like that, because I don't want to just, because I've, you know, I wrote a book and I have the story to tell, it doesn't necessarily make me, you know, a mental health advocate, you know, to me in every sense of the expression. You know, I feel like maybe I need some additional education, some additional, you know, whatever to kind of be able to have it to back me up a little bit, to say, hey, you know, I have been through all of this, but I've also taken this course and you know
I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And
so I know for me personally, that would be amazing. And I know that there are other people, when I was searching and I posted on Twitter that I was searching, I had other people come to me and say, hey, if you find something, let me know. So I think that's a great thing that you're doing. I think that'll be very well received.
Oh, that's fantastic. I'm glad to hear that. It's amazing. The first thing I want to say for anybody listening is that anybody can advocate. There really is. I have never met anybody that can't advocate. Now, of course, there's a difference between, you know, there's levels. There's people that advocate poorly, and there's people that advocate extraordinarily well. You know, for example, outgoing President Barack Obama, you know, he can advocate better for mental health things than I can, because he is, you know, famous. And he can also influence, you know, laws and lawmakers. So on one hand, I should just quit, because clearly that gentleman has more access than I have. So therefore, I'm not going to be as good. But we have to get away from that line of thinking. And so many people tell me, well, Gabe, I can never be as good as you, so I'm not going to do it. And that's just the worst thing to hear ever. It's the literal equivalent of saying, since that fundraiser is going to raise donate $1,000, I'm not going to donate $20. Well, that's so terrible, because your $20 is so meaningful and so helpful, but because somebody was able to donate more, you took your money back, and now the organization can't, you know, use it to help people. So we have to stop thinking that way. Also, you never know where you're going to end up. on day one, I thought I was going to give one speech, help out with a couple of support groups, and that was going to be the end of it. I was going to go back to being, you know, a computer networking dude. And it sort of took off to here. And it, you know, could end tomorrow or, you know, hey, maybe I'll get a phone call from an ex-politician, maybe somebody with a lot of free time all of a sudden. He'll be like, hey, I want to make this my thing. And then, hey, then it'll be huge. We just don't know. So it's good to be prepared. And that's sort of the focus of the workshop that I'm trying to create. It's this idea that you can do it. Here's how to do it effectively. And then figure out where you
right.
fit in, rinse, repeat. The end.
Right.
Exactly.
And it'll be funny.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's the one thing, too, is, you know, bringing in this level of interest for people and making it interesting, which I have no doubt that you would be able to do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, the first time I ever... You know, it's funny. One of the first pictures I ever saw of you, I thought, yeah, this guy can capture an audience. Because it's that picture of you on that little car.
Yes, the little yellow car. The
mm-hmm.
the let me tell a story about that because I love the story.
Okay.
I needed a headshot. And I used to be a real estate agent, you know, just for like a year. So I had a headshot. And when I first got started, that's the headshot that I used. And it looked like a real estate headshot because, you know, it was. So I needed a better headshot. And so I hired somebody to take my to get me a headshot. That's pretty much the bottom line. And I showed up at his studio to get a headshot. And while I was there, he had props. You know, he's a professional photographer. He does baby pictures, wedding pictures, the whole nine yards. And I started looking at these props. And mm-hmm. this little yellow car is sitting there, and I'm like, I want to sit in that. And he's like, you can't sit in it. And I'm like, I really want to sit in it. And finally, he's like, oh, okay, you can sit behind it, and we'll see how that looks. And, you know, I'm 6'3", I'm 270 pounds, I'm a big, big, big guy. So I'm actually sitting behind it, but I'm so gigantic, and you know, I've you know, pulled it into me, and I'm like wrapped around it that it really does look like I'm riding in this little yellow car. And the picture really became kind of a cool thing. He admits it. You know, he desperately tried. He thought I was going to crush the thing, which if I had sat on it, I most assuredly would have. But it really is a kind of a symbol of my personality in that, you know, there's a lot of things that aren't fun. And, you know, a 40-year-old guy sitting in a little toy taxi is fun. And I had fun.
Yeah.
I never thought I'd necessarily use it, you know, publicly. I kind of just wanted to maybe send it to my mom, but no, I like it. And so, you know, it was a happy accident. And that's really what, to tie it back, you know, that's another thing that advocacy is about. You know, half of my success has been accidental and half of it has been on purpose. And I think if you have a good balance of both, you can continue to move forward in life, but also as far as advocating is concerned, you've got to have a plan, but it needs to be a little open-ended. And sometimes you have a
right.
professional headshot. Sometimes you sit in a little toy
sometimes
car.
Yeah.
And, you know, I stumbled into it too. I didn't know that telling my story in the way that I did was going to launch me into this, you know, whole, you know, mental health community. And, you know, I'm really grateful for it. So, but getting back to you, when did you, I know that you now work with the website psychcentral.com. When did that start and what do you usually do for them?
So I have an array of jobs with PsychCentral.com. First, for those that don't know, PsychCentral.com is a great place to find mental health and psychology information, both from a professional standpoint. You know, we have PhDs, medical doctors, psychiatrists, psychologists, therapists, all the way to lived experience, which is where I fit in. So it really is a great place to get the technical definition of bipolar disorder, a family member's perspective of, you know, loving somebody with bipolar disorder, all the way to what it's like to live with bipolar disorder and every opinion in between. If you're interested in mental health and psychology on any level, PsychCentral.com is for you. So it's like WebMD, except way, 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 way cooler and focused on mental health. So I started over there just as a blogger. I mean, literally just a straight up blogger. I have a column over there called Don't Call Me Crazy. And I wrote for it. And
okay.
as I kept writing, you know, it's not their most popular blog. I don't want to lie to anybody, but it's decent. It's decidedly mediocre, but it's good and people talk about it. And it allowed me to know the owner and you know, the managing editor over there, a gentleman by the name of Dr. John Grohol. And, you know, he and I had some conversations and he needed some help with some stuff and he hired me to do it. So I'm what's called an assistant editor. It's basically a fancy term that means I do all kinds of stuff. I help with pictures. I help, you know, with blogging questions. I help with keywords. I fix stuff. I run their Twitter feed, which is fantastic. I just do a lot of little things that need to be done for them. But then what happened is they decided they wanted to have a podcast. And, hey, they know a very charismatic and funny public speaking kind of guy. And so now I'm the host of the Psych Central Show, which is their weekly podcast. And it's relatively new. It's a couple months old. And, you know, it's doing well. It's all about mental health and psychology. Sometimes we have guests. Sometimes we don't. We talk about things and it's what we do. And it's, so that's probably the thing that I'm over on Psych Central that I'm most known for now is the podcast. It's definitely the most popular. Second would be writing. And then I do a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes that nobody ever realizes I do, but without me, the whole thing would fall apart. Okay. Probably not. But,
Well, that's awesome.
You're kind of the jack of all trades over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really happy for you that you have got that gig there.
Oh, thanks so much. And it's fantastic. I really, people ask me how to get into this all the time and, you know, like to get into the public speaking and writing game. And this is the best lesson that I will teach anybody. Have some sort of secondary way to make money when you start. And because it's feast or famine. I mean, it's sort of like how, you know, every artist, every comedian, every rock band, you know, they talk about when they first got started, you know, how they, you know, worked at a restaurant or, you know, unloaded, mm-hmm. you know, worked at a grocery store during the day and then performed at night. It takes the pressure off because it's really hard to go from earning no money writing and speaking to making a full-time living writing and speaking. So to have that little buffer, you know, especially for a guy like me with an anxiety disorder, seeing that little bit of money trickle in and to be able to invest it in things like, you know, websites and business cards and things like that, it's really, really important. And frankly, I think it's a confidence booster because when I first started, I didn't have that job. So I watched like 3 months go by where not only did I make no money, but I spent money. So I'm like, oh man, right. I'm in this arena where I just lost, you know, $4,000 in 3 months. I'm terrible. I stink. And then I was able mm-hmm. to put together some, you know, like online gigs and, you know, do some, you know, consulting type thing. So then all of a sudden I was breaking even, and breaking even feels differently than losing money. And then I was slowly able to build from there. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of value in it from a psychological standpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're going to take one more quick break here. We will have our producer Scott take it away and we'll be right back with you.
Don't miss the Mental Health Memoir of the Year, It's Not Your Journey. It's Not Your Journey is the true story of one woman's 20-year battle with mental illness and her recovery from a suicide attempt in 2013. Rebecca Lombardo candidly reveals her real and raw emotions in dealing with depression, bipolar disorder, the loss of her mother and brother, and more. Pick it up today on Amazon.com or visit www.RebeccaLombardo.com for more information.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Joe. She's Rebecca. And you are listening to Voices for Change 2.0. And we are here with our guest, Gabe Howard.
And Gabe, are you still there?
Yeah, I am.
Hey, Gabe. What is your primary goal in speaking out about mental illness?
These conversations are very, very difficult to have, and I understand why they're difficult to have, but I want them not to be difficult. Mm-hmm. I want people to, you know, just to be able to say, I think I'm experiencing something. I don't know if I am or I'm not, but I think that I might be, and somebody, you know, not react, you know, negatively or or hostile or even just scared. I can't say that when I was a child, I always thought I was sick. I don't want to say I was a hypochondriac, but I just thought I had an ear infection all the time. But I would go to my mother and I'd say, I have an ear infection. And my mother would say, no, you don't. And I'd say, yes, I do. And she'd say, okay, we'll go to the doctor. We'd go to the doctor and the doctor would look in my ear and say, yay or nay. Sometimes I was right. Sometimes I was wrong. But my mother never freaked out. You know, she's just like, hey, he thinks he has it. We'll get it checked out. This is a conversation and we'll gather more information.
Right.
I don't know how it would have been if I would have came and said I had depression or I was suicidal. But I think if we were all honest with each other, they would have just smacked it down immediately. One, I didn't even have basic knowledge to ask those questions, which was dangerous enough. But right. I suspect if I would have said I want to kill myself, they would have told me to stop being dramatic and grounded me. Because this is what a lot of people do. And this is a dangerous thing to do. Certainly, some people are being dramatic. We do need to honor that. But there's no harm in checking it out. Just like there was no harm in having a doctor look in my ear and say, your kid doesn't have an ear infection.
Right.
There's just value in taking these things very, very seriously. And we don't. Mostly because we're afraid of them or we don't understand them. And I really think that needs fixed if we're going to move this forward. And if a giant, loud guy named Gabe standing up and just openly talk about it and a whole bunch of people are like, well, hey, you know, the world didn't end when he did it. Well,
right.
Maybe that will encourage more discussions for people.
Right.
Do you feel like at this point you're in a good place in your life and in general? Do you feel healthy, happy?
Yeah, I am absolutely the healthiest and happiest I've ever been.
That's good.
Except that I'm 40, so maybe physically I'm losing ground here. I can't walk as fast as I used to, but in all, turning 40 was
same
really
boat.
Hard on me.
Same boat.
Yeah,
I'm the oar next to you.
Yeah, I'm 43 now myself, so I get it. Believe me.
Screw you both.
Well, we're just rocking
forever.
It out. But this is the most mentally healthy that I've ever been and probably the happiest I've ever been. But I do want to interject that it's not perfect. I still have, I don't want to say a long way to go because I don't know how far I have to go. And certainly I've come such an incredibly long way from, you know, the days of suicidal thinking or unchecked mania, on and on and on. But it still affects me. So, you know, people are like, oh, well, you're completely well. There's no problem. And I take pills every morning. I take pills every night. I go to a doctor at least twice a year. I go to a therapist, you know, at least once a month. I have all of these things that I have to do to manage this illness that I don't want. And, you know, sometimes it just frankly kicks my butt when I don't want it to. But I also want to give a nod to how far I've come. So, you know, sometimes people look at me and they're like, oh, man, I wish I could be perfect like you. And I'm like, oh, No. I talk about a lot of the successes. I talk about the things to do to get well. But make no mistake, within the last 6 months, I spent a day in bed crying. It's an absolute fact. It's more about understanding that, you know, there is a reality of even living well with bipolar disorder that isn't as quote unquote perfect as somebody who doesn't have it. So
right.
Yeah,
but it's hard to get that
there
message
are good
out
days and bad days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
and
it's like for me, I Beck obviously has her good days and has her bad days. And, you know, she's one of those people that likes to get up to, you know, do stuff around the house, clean up the house, whatever. She'll make a list of, oh, I wanted to do all these different things today. And I couldn't get myself to get out of bed. I'm so depressed right now. And it's always the same thing for me. I always tell her the exact same thing every time. It's like, honey, I know this. It's okay. You know, and
but stuff will still be there tomorrow.
It's not going anywhere.
Yep.
You know, your health is more important. And I try and stress to her, you know, the only thing I ever expect of her, and it's been the same thing for, we've been married 15 and a half years now. And the only thing I ever expect from her is that she loves me. That's it. I don't ask anything else of this woman ever. You know, it's the truth. You know, it's for me, it's everything else is just details. As long as we've got each other and, you know, she understands that I'm there for her and all that, we can tackle anything else, you know? So it's good. I know it's good for her to know that no matter what, she's got somebody that she can rely on and understand, you know?
Yeah, it definitely is. And it definitely helps, especially with the, you know, guilt that comes with not being able to accomplish what you wanted to accomplish that day. So, but we are coming up to where we're going to have to wrap up the show. Gabe, one last time, we know that your website is in the making currently, under construction, as they say, but it is www. www.gabehoward.com. And would you quickly like to share your social media with our listeners again, listeners, one more time, so that we can get you some more, you know, people wanting to hire you and
yes,
followers.
So, yep. Yes, I am at www.facebook.com. It's either slash, so facebook.com/GabeHoward29. Over on Twitter, I'm GabeHoward29. I think on YouTube, I'm GabeHoward29, although there's not a lot there these days. But the thing that you want to remember is GabeHoward29. It's 29 when I created all this stuff. It's been that long. And of course, my email address is Gabe@GabeHoward.com. And while I can't necessarily answer every single email that I get, I answer an amazing amount of it. I'm really quite proud of how much I've been able to answer. And so I make that promise to you, but go ahead and bookmark GabeHoward.com, because in the next 4 or 5 days, it'll be up. It's been a huge transition. There's going to be a new video blog up there. There's going to be just a lot of really cool features that I've really been wanting to do for a long time. And I've finally gotten into the place where I'm able to get it going. And it's also one-stop shopping for the type of free stuff that I provide. And I provide a lot of free stuff, you know, free writing, free videos. The podcast is free, free interviews. I answer as many emails as I can. There's, of course, a comment section. And I really feel that it's of vital importance to just give all that away, because, you know, this is where a lot of people start. If you want the advanced package, that's always more. But no, I mean, I would say that half of what I do, probably 60-70% of what I do is completely free, and the 30% that I charge for pays for the free stuff. So I really got, you know, a pretty awesome, at least in my mind, you know, business model that can keep enough stuff free that it's that people that need help and can't afford it can get it. And that's really my goal. That's my goal.
And that's an awesome resource to have out there for people.
Absolutely. Definitely.
You know, we have friends all the time that, you know, hey, where do I go? What do I do? You know, they're hitting us up for advice, and we, you know, obviously provide what we can. And, you know, even though you've got, you know, Affordable Care Act, which who knows how long we're going to have that around, being able to say, hey, well, go check out our friend Gabe's website, you know, that it's a really good resource. You know, it's so beneficial that you have that, you know. Thank you so much for putting yourself out there like that, Gabe.
Especially, and your new program will be added to your website as well. Your new advocacy program will be added. And I think that, like I said, will be a huge help to a lot of people. And, you know, as we get to where we have to wrap up the show here, we just want to really say thank you so much for coming on, for putting up with a few schedule issues throughout the holidays because of us being displaced for for a while.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm glad you got. I mean, I don't know if you've told your listeners, but I know what you've been through because we've talked about it, and I'm so glad that you're back, and I'm so glad that you made it through. And I was pulling for you the whole time. Helpful as that
can
be.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, we're going to ask you to stay on the line for a minute, and we're going to go out featuring the song Warrior by Trevor Page.
And we'll catch you guys next week. Have a great weekend.
Next week, as Rebecca and Joe continue to battle the stigma of mental illness, follow us on Twitter at Voices for Change RJ and on Facebook at Voices for Change 2.0.
The best thing about the new $1 sausage and cheese muffin at Tim Hortons is the savory sausage. Ooh, and the cheese. Oh, and the toasty English muffin. Those are the three best things about it. Oh, and that it's prepared to order. You order one and they prepare it for you. That's the single best thing about it. And that it's a dollar! Grab a savory sausage and cheese English muffin breakfast sandwich at Tim Hortons right now for just a dollar. Great quality at a great value. It's all good at Tim Hortons. $1 sausage and cheese English muffin sandwich. No substitutions. Limited time only. Participation varies.